and welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 514. My name is James Gilmore. Joining me today, it's Rick Cowley.
Hello.
Who I can see with my own eyes. And if you're watching this on YouTube, you can see it as well. Hello, everybody. We're doing it on Zoom because video calls are life now. That's all anyone does at this point, isn't it? We just look through the computer at our friends whom we used to touch. With consent, of course.
Of course. You know.
I am delighted by the fact that I'm currently pointing at a little pile of fluffy toys in the background that I can now see. This is very revealing, Rick. I mean,
this is literally just the tip of the iceberg.
Oh, my God. Are these your partners? Or?
This is my partner's. What you don't see is there's actually, like, a huge box. That's the top of the box. The huge box is filled to the brim. And then underneath, it's on top of a chest of drawers where there are more teddy bears.
Sweet Lord of mercy.
So we were running a bot on Twitter that would announce which teddy bear she had to, like, cuddle each day. This is a bit of insight into how my life goes. So we built this bot.
On OnlyFans now? Is this what you're saying?
There's nothing inappropriate about it. But what we did, we built a database of all the teddy bears and what they were called. So we know there's about 87, 88 of them in that box alone.
Are you saying you've got a plushy spreadsheet with
yes,
all the details?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Do they have backstories? Have you given them detailed characters?
No, that would be going too far.
Oh, sorry, yes, you're right, that would be
That would just be ridiculous, James. Don't be insane.
I'll say, if you're watching this on the YouTube version, then this is kind of the uncut version of it. If you're listening to this, then we're still going to be putting this out as normal. I'm going to be editing it as usual, so there might be a few ums and ers removed and, you know, a little bit. When Rick starts getting really racist, I'll take that out. But for YouTube, you get the full package, the full uncut thing. And obviously, it's not quite as good quality on YouTube because we're doing it through Zoom. You get the premium studio-produced version if you're just listening. But hopefully you won't mind. I know you guys on the channel are usually used to seeing videos that are very short, and now this is going to be a long podcast. If it's not your thing, if you're not into the podcast aspect of watching it, don't worry. You don't need to watch these videos anymore. We'll clearly tag them up the front. It will say podcast.
Don't so comment. Don't dislike.
Don't say this
just
is not a review because we know it's not a review. But a lot of people have taken to start watching these things now, especially again in these lockdown times. People just want to see a face other than their own face in the mirror day after day, and that's it. So we'll do this instead. But the normal show will, of course, continue. So what have we got for you today? Well, we have got news, including the likes of a massive update to Oceanhorn 2, Knights of the Lost Realm, which is going to completely rejig the entire thing. We'll show you how. Cyberpunk 2077... is already out, nearly, on mobile. Not really. We'll explain in a minute. We're going to tell you about the Nintendo Directs and what's happening with those. We'll give you a little update on Oculus Quest, plus a whole bunch of new games, including the likes of Astarlo, Oh Money, Pay Money, If Found, Rumble Hockey, and more. Like Danganronpa. Yes. But first, it's the news. You all might be aware that Cyberpunk is coming out in the very, very, very near future, and everyone's very excited about it. It's going to be the big game. Well, if you can't wait, then go over and have a look at what NetEase is up to, because they've just announced a brand new Cyberpunk game for mobile. It is called Code T. It is, judging by all the pictures and information, it's just they've gone and looked at Cyberpunk and gone, we'll do that, but we'll do it on mobile. I will say, I can't see anything in the way of actual gameplay.
No. It is just sizzle reel Blade Runner 2077 or whatever it was called. Neon purple lights. Here's a person who clearly has augmentation in their face. Mm-hmm. Cyberpunk. It's everything that you would imagine from the genre, and also from somebody who has ever watched the trailer for Cyberpunk and thought, yeah, that's a good idea. We should do that.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll be good.
As soon as I know what it is, I'll make a value judgment.
Yeah.
But the thing is, and I was talking about this with friends, is that, like, the reason these happen so much on mobile, and we've seen it happen a lot, is that the turnaround time on mobile is that much quicker.
Mm.
So you have that ability to be able to kind of churn something out super fast, and then because the approval process is... I mean, it takes a little bit on iOS, but still not too much. And the approval process on Google Play, I mean, is there an approval process? Really? We've all seen the stuff that appears on Google Play. So it's a very easy platform to see something, go, right, I'll do a version of that quick, turn it around, and then get it out and get it up before the inspiration even goes live. And we've seen things like, Ridiculous Fishing famously got cloned before it even came out. And then there is the oft-told tale of Threes and 2048.
NetEase has also done this kind of thing before, because when PUBG was starting to become big, they launched Knives Out and Rules of Survival and a third Battle Royale on like the same day or something, and then just saw which one managed to hold, even though the games were basically exactly the same and were all pretty much just PUBG, but on mobile. But it beat PUBG to mobile by about 2 years, probably, I think.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And obviously prior to Fortnite as well, which took the longest to come over. But I can't remember which one of those still lives, because I played Rules of Survival. I don't know about the other one. I played at least one of the other ones.
I think Knives Out is still holding on strong.
Really? Okay.
And yeah, there's all sorts of other mobile battle royales these days that have ridiculous names. The big one, of course, being Garena Free Fire, which continues to do well. And has just surpassed 80 million daily active users, which is pretty wild.
Well, they've had they had that big Twitch tournament, didn't they, where they broadcast the kind of world championships of it all. And we've talked about it before on the show, and yet that's the one that is incredibly popular everywhere else in the world. Maybe in the UK, we don't hear quite so much about it, but it's insanely popular and doing just as well, if not better, than loads of other competitors. But we'll let you know what happens with Code T as soon as we see some gameplay. If it's a match 3 puzzler, I will laugh. just a neon pink match 3 puzzler, but we'll keep you informed.
NetEase does have another game, actually, that I think is worth mentioning. On a similar sort of strain is Project Ragnarok. And you look at it and you go, oh it's Assassin's Creed Vikings.
Oh, really?
Or whatever the new one's called, Valhalla.
Yeah.
And you have to imagine that some of these games are probably... they've been in development for a few months at least. Project Ragnarok in particular looks like it's probably been in development for a bit, although what they showed was basically just a teaser trailer CG thing. And it doesn't take 2 days to knock one of those together, but certainly the ideas will have been around for a while. It's just a little bit of unfortunate timing, or a very clever set of timing, to sort of after Assassin's Creed Valhalla comes out to go, oh, by the way, we're going to have a mobile game that's all Norse mythology but with pretty anime ladies, which is NetEase's whole thing.
Oh yeah, it's pretty anime girls, right? Good. That's gonna suck. But that is a good trick to do, where you effectively let someone else do the PR and generate a huge interest in an area, and then swoop in and fulfill that need before they get to.
It's the snakes on a train of of game development, really.
God, yeah. God, that's extremely 90s. Goodness me. So. Let's mention Oceanhorn, because we did talk about it in the intro there. The game that has been incredibly popular, one of the big things that came out on, is an Apple Arcade exclusive, right? Still, as far as I know.
Yeah, I don't remember if it's exclusive, because it's definitely in development for other consoles, but it might be an exclusive for now.
For now, right, fine. But we played it at the beginning, it got reviewed, we did loads of walkthroughs and everything, and of course it's done really, really well. They are massively overhauling it. So they released a little thing to say what they're going to be doing and tweaking. And we're talking about, they classify it as quality of life improvements, but it's quite major. So they're tweaking the graphics, so they're doing new models, textures, that kind of thing. Specifically, they say that menus are going to be clearer, a new, more obvious way to assign shards, and the entire world will look a bit better, improved animations, that sort of thing. They're also unlocking a 60 frames per second mode if you happen to have a higher end device. If you've got a nice brand new iPhone or a top tier Android, you can get it super duper smooth. And additional accessibility features, so in-game text, new tutorial info, and stuff like that. Apparently, 100 voice lines have been recorded for a new ending to try and give some personality to the ending scenes. This is like a proper... I don't know what this is in response to, whether there's been complaints in the game about certain aspects, or whether they're just... it's been successful, or they're doubling down on it and expanding.
Well, it could be, because obviously they were... when I have seen it before, it was running on, Switch and stuff. So, they had their efforts on a multi-platform release, and that was kind of the whole plan to begin with. But now, obviously, it became an Apple Arcade exclusive, and I think it launched with Apple Arcade, didn't it? So it's possible that they looked at the game, they saw what they had, and they went, right, we want to hit this deadline, we want to be part of the Apple Arcade launch, we're going to have to cut some stuff and then maybe come back to it later and make sure that the final product is tweaked and perfect enough so that when it lands on Apple Arcade, no matter how, if it's missing some stuff, sure, but the rest of it will be great and perfect and everything like that. So I think that might be part of why it's coming now and not when the game should have launched.
They have a long-term game plan for everything now. Yeah. With everything needs to be updated every 3 months, 6 months. You need additional content, so you have to kind of hold something back nowadays in order to make it work long-term.
Yeah.
You get what's called the Criminal Hunt expansion as well. So these are two side things, the Shield of Kronos and the Criminal Hunt, where you get an extra minigame boss fight in every region. You have to look for notices posted on the night board in the White City if you visited there, if you played the game. And you have to track down the Bandit Lords. It's been a while since I played that. I don't remember Bandit Lords. But either way, all this stuff is free, provided, of course, you're subscribed to Apple Arcade. And I'm very curious. I haven't seen any figures from Apple about how many people have hung on. After the initial launch and everything, they're famously kind of closed doors about all of this. They don't tell anyone anything, and they don't need to. But I'd like to see how many people, like, kept the subscription. We're still in that first year, though, aren't we? Where,
yeah.
Like, if you buy a new Apple device or something like that, you would get it free for a year.
Yeah, so, I think it's about, like, I think we're 8 months in and Apple still hasn't revealed sort of any figures about how many people got subscriptions, how many people have held on to their subscriptions. I mean, on Biz, we've been doing interviews with developers who make Apple Arcade games, and every time we're like, do you have any figures you can share with us? They're like, no! We just have to move on from that question as quickly as possible. But they all say, oh, we're very happy with the results, which obviously they will say. But yeah, no concrete figures still, and nobody knows how much they're making, how they're even making the money, which is presumably Apple giving it to them, how Apple is then, I don't know. It's just so much unknown around Apple Arcade.
So if you want to go and check out the game, this will be launching. I'm not sure they've given us a specific date on the update, but we'll let you know when it goes live. And I think it's going to be, I imagine, pretty soon. They wouldn't be talking about it if it wasn't like a couple of weeks or something. Let's talk about Nintendo. We mentioned the whole like Direct debacle, and there was an idea of like they're not going to be doing their Direct around the usual E3 time, and maybe it's been pushed back, maybe it's been cancelled altogether. And it seems to be that they are, well, they quote, have no plans for the foreseeable future. This is something that was reported in VentureBeat. So the Japanese plan cancelled plans for the Direct in June, and apparently it's halted all digital announcements for the event.
Yeah.
And there's going to be no E3 Direct next month. So if you are looking forward to the little announcements and what's coming in Nintendo, then they're not, nothing.
Well,
nothing's coming.
It's the Directs themselves that they've cancelled, and they've told developers who were going to be part of the Directs, if you have announcements, just make them on your own time kind of thing. Don't wait for us to group them all together. But, I mean, last week, I think it was last week, and I think we spoke about it last week, was Paper Mario got suddenly announced.
Yes, a first-party Mario title.
Yeah, and
it was
just tweeted out with a teaser trailer, and then they started slowly like sending out the press releases and email things and putting it up for pre-order and that kind of thing. And I think that's what we're going to see more of from Nintendo, is them just sort of going, we've got a game, here it is. And
it's coming out in like a month or two, isn't it?
Yeah, it comes out like July 25th, I think. So they announced it probably around the same time it's gone gold or something. So the game's finished probably. And they've just gone, okay, well, the game's ready. We'll put it out in 2 months, I guess. We were talking about this on the PG Biz podcast. We think that Nintendo, they started the Direct trend, getting people to do more online announcements and don't wait for E3 and don't wait for these banner events. And now people are starting, like, there's all these other digital events that are starting to spring up. So you've got Summer Game Fest and New Game Plus, which has just been announced from a bunch of Japanese developers, and IGN are doing one, and other people are doing them, and there's more to be announced, I'm sure. And I think we're going to start getting people who are just fatigued over all these different events, because there's so many of them that you have to sort of keep up with this constant cycle, that eventually developers are just going to go, well, why don't we just announce it now on our own time if we're big enough? So, you know, Nintendo can get away with it. Sony can get away with it. Microsoft will probably do it at some point. Bethesda, I imagine, would just give up and surprise drop Elder Scrolls 6 for a laugh.
Well, that's the thing. It relies on you being big enough. They're in a position, Nintendo, where they can do that because they've got that reach, whereas smaller developers maybe need to piggyback on the back of an event where everyone's eyes are, you know, pointing in that direction. By the way, obviously, Pokémon Connects 2 is coming up. Do sign up for that. PGC Digital number 2. We're going to be doing that in like 2 weeks or something.
Yeah.
It's really crept up quick. But yeah, we've already sort of exceeded our expectations again on that one, which is very exciting. So we're looking forward to putting that live. If you want to sign up, go and sign up. There are links around the site and all that business. So, but yes, you're talking about people being fatigued with digital events.
I mean, that's fine. Well, no. You know, pick your favourite ones. Obviously.
That's right.
Like Pocket Gamer Connect Digital 2.
So the other thing that got mentioned, and this relates to my interests personally, because I was scouring Biz as well, and I think you've talked about this briefly, but the fact that we've now got a figure of 100 million has been spent on Oculus Quest content.
Yes.
Which, I mean, 100 million is a lot, but in the scheme of, you know, games in general and gaming in general, maybe doesn't sound as much. Especially when we're not talking about like 2 billion or a billion spent on Fortnite in 2 years like you were last year, just on mobile. So 100 million, that's small fry.
The thing to consider though, if you look at Oculus Quest content, I think the most expensive games on there are about 23 quid.
Very true.
And so when you actually think about, we see apparently like 20 games on Oculus Quest have now generated $1 million in sales. So what you're actually seeing is 20 games that have managed to shift about 400,000 copies. Which when you break it down like that and you think, well, VR still hasn't hit the mainstream in that kind of way, and it's still like the Oculus Quest is still pretty expensive, so it's definitely something that only massive tech heads like me and you would even consider purchasing. When you consider that you've got 400,000 of those people buying all this content, that's pretty amazing if you break it down like that. And then a couple of games have already hit 2 million in revenues, so that's close to 1 million copies sold. Which,
yeah,
again, is huge.
We got Moss here, which was something that was available on all platforms.
Yeah.
I think you could even play it in a non-VR mode. I might be lying, but that's a little mouse one, mouse platformer. And Pistol Whip, which came out, I think that came out to Quest and Rift and everything else around about the same time. I've got a friend who is like was addicted to that for a short period, where he just you know completed everything, and it's a great like rhythm action. It's kind of a John Wick sim. Mm. But there are beats, and it's very good. It's very fun. I spent a bunch of time on it. It is all about that much smaller install base buying these games. And the other thing to note is that the Quest still doesn't have anywhere near the library that Rift and other, you know, VR devices have, because they can tap into your existing PC library. And also, there's a load more games existing for them because A, they've been out for much longer than the Quest, and B, the hardware, if you've got a beefy gaming PC, it can run a lot more than the Quest does. And then you have to do either a lo-fi port for the Quest, or it just doesn't come out. So it's still kind of impressive. I'd like to see what the Rift had gotten. I'd be interested to see the figures just on PC and whether that's considerably smaller or... you know, in comparison to the Oculus, or whether it's done, you know, well in a very quiet way.
Yeah.
But the Quest is the thing that seems to have mainstreamed it, you know?
It'd be difficult to track sales on Rift as well, because obviously you can buy the games from Oculus, but you can get them on Steam and probably other platforms as well, whereas Quest is so, like, self-contained that it only has its own store. You can't buy... I mean, you can sideload apps onto it, apparently, but you can't, like, buy content for the headset without going to Oculus. So obviously they would keep track of their own sales figures and that kind of thing. So I genuinely think Quest is like the future of VR as well, because it's super, super cool. It's wireless. It's just dope. If anyone from Oculus is listening or watching, please send me one. I keep saying that every time my face appears on a video or something, I politely ask. Nobody's got in touch yet.
I did wonder what the angle was. I'm going to reach over to the side here, and I'm going to wave my Rift at the camera.
Aww.
in a smug way.
But
even saying that, like, having played the Quest a bunch as well, like, that graphical downstep is noticeable, but you compare that to the ability to move around the room, and it's like, no, this is clearly a superior thing. Once they've bumped the resolution up and increased the processing power in the headset, and it's wireless and looks as amazing, then that's it. It's just like, it's done. It's been sold out the entire time through the quarantine. It's now back in stock, and people are marking them up like crazy. Even the base set, which usually costs about 400, people are flogging them for £500-600 on eBay or more, which is disgusting. I just discovered they released Tetris Effect on Oculus, and I was like, oh, that's fantastic. So I always wanted to play it, but they released it as a PlayStation VR exclusive. Mm-hmm. And when I said that, one of my mates in the chat was like, you know, it's been out on like Rift for like nearly a year. And I was like, huh? And I immediately went over to the Quest store, went over to the Epic store, And they had it on there, and yeah. I picked it up in that mad Epic sale. And I've played it for only... I've only had time to play it for like 3/4 of an hour. It's bliss.
It is. I have it on PSVR. It's just... It's the killer app, and it does so little with the VR aspect. And yet, just that full immersion into the world of like, this is the screen, and all the things are flying at you, and you've got your headphones in and everything like that. It's like, oh, wow.
And the way the synergy with the music, the way it responds to what's going on, and then when it does, obviously everything flying around you starts to animate. But I mean, this is a 2018 thing where that's when it was big, but I did not have access to it then. And especially now, in terms of like, you put it on and you're floating in a void.
Mm.
And it's the opposite of being trapped in a house or trapped in a flat, wherever you are right now. And you're just like, woo, and then, and I'm not even a Tetris guy.
Mm.
It's obviously one of the all-time classic games, and I played it a bunch, but I'm not like, ooh, it's my favorite game or anything like that. I admire it, and it's grand, and I enjoy playing it, but... the way that this adds to the satisfaction, the kind of visual and musical feedback you get from successfully like clearing blocks and clearing lines is such a little, like, I mean it when I say bliss, it kind of blisses you out. You get all the tinglies.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be, that might be this bank holiday weekend. Ignoring my wife with a headset.
Stay away from me, wife. I'm only playing Tetris Effect this weekend.
That's right. I'm socially distancing. Don't touch me. Out and about this week, we're going to start with... what should we start with? Actually, let's start with something that's not on the main list. Danganronpa Trigger Happy Havoc Anniversary Edition on iOS and Android. That came out yesterday. And I'm gonna throw over to you, Rick, because I looked at this and I've got it. I've played it. But I went, this Rick knows all about this, doesn't he?
Danganronpa is one of my favourite series of all time, so yes, I do know too much about it.
There we go.
So Danganronpa, the basic setup is 16 teenagers get locked up in a school and are forced to murder each other, and if they don't murder each other, then they'll all die. And slowly more rules keep getting added to force them into this murder game, so they all break down as people and their spirits are so worn down that they'll, I don't know, become an army of zombies. I'm not entirely sure what the end game is. With the despair game, but that is what it is. It's the ultimate killing game, is designed to bring about the ultimate despair and ruin everybody's lives.
That's what the bear wants. He just wants everyone to be miserable forever.
Yeah, no, and the whole thing is streamed live to viewers in the outside world who are watching these 16 teenagers reduce themselves to base murder. So it's kind of, you know, it's kind of like Battle Royale, the film, not the genre, but with cameras and cute cuddly bears and that kind of thing. It's brilliant. It's utterly brilliant. It's one of the...
you should say it's a visual novel.
Yeah, it's a visual novel. It's kind of like... it feels a lot like Phoenix Wright, in the sense that it's kind of a visual novel, but then you have these moments where you do have to sort of engage and pay attention and then use your knowledge to get through certain scenarios. So it's split into daytime and nighttime. Well, not nighttime, I can't remember what it's called. But basically there'll be bits where you wander around and you chat to characters and you get to develop relationships and you can give them gifts and all that traditional visual novel, like relationship building stuff. And then someone dies. You have to go investigate the scene. You have to sort of find all the clues, then talk to people, then go do some more investigation, and then Monokuma the bear drags you all into a interrogation, like cross-examination thing, where everybody still alive has a massive debate together about who they believe is the killer, and you have to listen to people's statements and then find contradictions, and then you have these truth bullets that you have to then shoot through their things to counter their arguments and get people back on track and talk about the right things and make sure they're all leading towards the same thing, because everybody has to unanimously agree on who they think is the killer or else everybody dies. And if they get it wrong, then everybody dies, and if they get it right, then the person is brutally murdered in front of their eyes in a tragic and horrific cutscene.
And quite funny cutscene.
Some of them can be funny, some of them are really brutal and horrible.
And it does tread a strange line where it's that kind of goofy, wacky, silly melodrama, and when you're exploring the school that you're locked in the beginning and talking to the characters, they're very like big, colourful, weird, caricatured characters, and you know, they all look very different in terms of body size and whatnot, and they're all very exaggerated, and you've got that like, it's well over the top. And then some of the deaths happen, and you're like, oh, hang on, that's That's really nasty.
Yeah, it's a really horrible game, but sort of offset by the fact that, like, all the blood is pink instead of red, so it's sort of goofy looking even when they die. All the characters, as you say, are, like, over-the-top, larger-than-life caricatures of human beings rather than being actual fully fleshed people. Although some people slowly start getting fleshed out as the story goes, but some people are just designed to be 2D idiots who are fodder for the game. I think... Everyone should play it.
Well, it was originally a Vita game, wasn't it? That's where it originally landed.
Yeah,
and it then got ported onto other consoles. The reason I've played it is because I got it on that PS4 like bundle where it's the first two games, and I got it for about like 15-20 quid, which does raise an issue about this one, which is that it's about £17.
Yes,
for the one game.
Is still cheaper than you could get it normally. As you say, you've got you've got the bundle of OnePlus2 Reload, and that's like 30 quid for two games.
I suppose I got it in a sale, yeah.
Yeah, and if you got it in a sale, if you buy Danganronpa Trigger Happy Havoc on PS Vita not in a sale, it's still usually like 20 quid or something. The third game in the series, which I imagine will be coming to mobile later and will probably be about the same price, that still goes for £55. And it's because they know that people will spend that amount of money to buy these games because they've dedicated...
It's quite culty now, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
The one thing that did catch me out on this was I watched the trailer for this Anniversary Edition, and we should say that they've changed a bunch of stuff for mobile, so the interface has been tweaked and bits and bobs, because obviously it has to rely on touchscreen when originally it was Vita and buttons and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
But in the trailer, they've got the English language voices, and I've never heard them.
Really?
Because I've got the... I put it in Japanese on the PlayStation. So suddenly seeing all the characters that I like vaguely recognize with their weird English dubs, that's always a strange experience for me when you hear that. You're like, oh. Some people are really putting in the effort. Some people, not so much.
I actually really like the English dubs across the Danganronpa series because some of them are so just over the top and ridiculous that you can't help but love them, and it really adds to a lot of the characters. And I don't know if it'd be the same with the Japanese dubs, but yes. So they changed the interface, so now it's your movement is controlled with a virtual joystick. I saw in one of the gameplay videos I was watching, and obviously everything's controlled via touchscreen. I believe they've added new, like, almost level selects kind of things, so you can jump to different scenarios and play through them again, and there's a gallery you can view all the CGs that you unlock throughout the game, which I don't know why it wasn't in the original game, because that's a mainstay of
Intimacy Gallery.
Yeah.
Which sounds well Persona 5 or something.
I mean, some of the CGs are pretty out there. It's an anime game. What did you expect? On the surface, it looks goofy and weird, and then when you actually get into it, it's super deep and involving, and the story just goes off the rails in ways you could never possibly predict. It's constantly twisting and turning, even in Trigger Happy Havoc, where they still hadn't worked out the whole universe yet. And if you want to get into the Danganronpa series, you need to play this one first, because the rest of them constantly refer back to the first one. The second one is pretty much a direct sequel. The third one still refers back to earlier events, and the payoff of going through all three games when you get to the end of the series is phenomenal. It's like nothing else. There could never be a fourth game. The way they closed it out, there could never be a fourth game.
I haven't done the third one. It still has that slight element, and particularly in the second one, there's a couple of, the weird Japanese fan service-y bits.
Yes.
There's still a bit of that going on, and in the second one is the one, I think, where it gets a bit did you have to?
Yeah.
Because you were doing quite well up until now, and then...
The second one does have a character that consists... Her whole character is that she keeps falling over and showing her underwear. That's a bit uncomfortable. The first game has a really poor way of representing trans people. One of the characters is trans, and that whole reveal is handled really badly. And it would have been nice. I don't know if maybe they've changed it in 10th anniversary. I can't imagine they have, and it's a shame that they wouldn't update it for modern times, because it is a 10-year-old game now, and some of the script, it reflects that. It feels lost in time at this point.
Yeah, but so much content is, you're something you always have to bear in mind when you're watching or reading or whatever it is, when you're like, okay, this came from 15, 20, whatever it is, years ago. And you're like, maybe this is not cool now. So, stuff adapts as time passes. But there is always this thing with the Japanese thing where the visual novels that get produced, there's always that, either they're full on actual eroji kind of, fan service things, which is fine. But when you're playing something, when you're like, oh, no, this isn't that, this is this, and then they have to throw a dose of that in.
Yeah.
And you go... Oh, I was Oh, and I was going to show this to my partner as well, and now you've ruined it because it makes me look like a massive perv. And I mean, I've nothing wrong with just going straight for the throat of it all, but, you know, just had to slip it in there into a bit of family entertainment.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Not that Danganronpa is family entertainment, given its incredibly violent...
No, it's a
horrible
murder sim. I grant you. It's fine, it's fine. So, this is currently out, iOS and Android. Again, £17, expensive thing, and the other two are going to appear, and I guess, as you say, they'll be similarly priced. So, we'll see how it goes and how it sells on iOS and whatnot. On to slightly smaller, more accessible games. Let's have a look at... have you done Astarlo?
Yes, I had a very quick go. I'll allow you to explain.
This is an interesting one. So this is one of those games that's played in an isometric style where you are effectively floating on a little island in the air, and you spawn in, and then a few enemies go doof, 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 and spawn in around you. And the way you attack them is just by kind of dragging and releasing. And your character will go woof, and rocket straight across the screen and slash. It is a one-hit kill. And likewise, if they come running up to you and touch you, you're dead. That's your run over. Once you've eliminated all the enemies on that bit of the island that you're floating on, another island goes and kind of appears immediately next to it in that bastion world building itself kind of way. And that's it. You just move over to that tile and then more enemies spawn in, just kill them all, so on and so on. And the world just keeps expanding and it kind of serves as a run. There is a campaign mode that you're going through on a single player. That kind of, not has a story, but environments change and that. There is also an endless mode where you can just keep going and going and going with waves and waves of enemies. It's very unforgiving.
Yes.
Don't know how you found it.
Yeah, I played it for, as I say, like a couple of minutes, and I got through the tutorial and I was getting through the first level, and I got... it was the first time it was like four enemies that appeared, and the first enemy that appeared was right next to me, so it was like this close, and it just went boop, and I died, and I lost the entire thing. I was like... I don't really want to watch a video and continue, so I just quit and stop playing. I feel
right.
So you
I
know
a bit longer.
Yeah, I feel like I mean, obviously I get frustrated very quickly with these kinds of games, but I feel like it could have been a little bit more forgiving, at least in the initial stages.
So I quite like this. It feels like it's one of those things that feels like it's like 90% there. Mm. And they needed a little bit more to it. But what you learn is that you have to move incredibly quickly. Basically, standing still is death in this game. And you can only shoot so far across the screen. You won't rocket off indefinitely. You have a range. And it's about, like, as soon as you start getting to big crowds of enemies, you're just going swipe, 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 but just chaining together these attacks. Because the moment anyone comes anywhere near you, you're doomed. And then other objects start popping up. So you get like spinny blades of death appear. You get these big long snake monsters turn up that start making it very difficult for you to move around without crashing into them. So the game is very good at throwing obstacles at you. Once you get about like 20 or 30 screens deep, it's like, okay, this is really tough now. It's free to play. You can watch adverts to continue or go back to the beginning. And it does pop up the annoying in-game overlays, you know, where just a little tiny ad pops up while you're playing. And I don't like that. That's not good. But there are lots of elements of it I thought were quite neat. And it's certainly got the older blood racing. So Astarlo is the name of that. That's App Store and Google Play for free. We'll mention If Found. This is the one I haven't played this week.
Yeah.
I think we covered it a few podcasts ago, and I was talking about Annapurna releasing noodly indie games.
Yep.
This is it. This is that noodly indie game. It's out. It's another visual novel, speaking of, which, according to what Dan has written in the article, the story starts with the world ending after she attempts to destroy her diary and her memories. And then it's about her, like, retelling her life and piecing everything back together. So, haven't played it. It's $4.99, Google Play and the App Store. So, maybe it's good. I'm sure it's good, actually. And Annapurna tend to publish quite good stuff. So, chances are. But know what you're getting yourself in for. Ah, right. Rumble Hockey's out.
Yes.
So we've already had... Is it Rumble Soccer? Is that the name of it? Yeah. Which I almost downloaded again. Then I realized I'd done a video review of it, so I went and watched that instead. This is the same. Like, the exact same thing, isn't it?
Is it?
But with hockey. Oh. It feels almost identical.
I haven't seen or played Rumble Soccer.
Right, okay.
So I wouldn't know, unfortunately. I feel that's a failing on my behalf.
No, well, this is Supercell's sports game thing, which is effectively Clash Royale, but with soccer, or in this case, hockey. Mm. And so you have characters charging at the bottom of the screen. You kind of ping them out into the environment. And then they start operating under their own accord. If you played the soccer version, you know this, and you get about like 4 or 5 characters at the bottom of the screen that you can choose from. They'll all have different powers. You'll get this sniper wolf character who sort of sits back, charges a little bit, and then goes poof, and launches a very accurate shot. You get a raging bull who just charges around, smashing into other players, so you effectively use him for interference. And then a lion who's kind of an all-rounder and takes shots near the goal. And it's about you facing off against real-life opponents and playing this kind of tactical game of soccer. It's good. It's quite good. We enjoyed the soccer version. And playing the hockey one, I was just like, I mean, apart from the fact they're holding sticks and it's a puck, it feels exactly the same.
Yeah, I'm looking at your video now, the video review on Pocket Gamer, and this is the same game.
I mean, the dynamics change because clearly if you've got a football, it can bounce around a bit.
Yeah.
As in it goes up off the ground, whereas a hockey puck doesn't. The arenas are slightly bigger in the hockey version. But barring that, I mean, if you've played this the first soccer game, you know what this is 100%. So if you liked it, get it, I guess.
See, I played quite a bit of this because I got really into it.
It's quite good.
It's very good. The act of like firing your characters onto the playing field and then watching them go about their thing, and the tactics you can use is like you can get the magnet to suck away the goalie, and then you
keeper,
you pass it to the to whoever's closest, and that bounces it in, and you score a goal. It's like, hell yeah, this is great. It's got that really fun core gaming appeal. But yeah, as you say, it is identical to Rumble Soccer. So I wonder if they're going to run them kind of in tandem, or if they're going to see like which one is continuing to do better and then move over to that sport. I don't really see the point in having two of the same game.
It does risk splitting it, doesn't it? Like, people might choose one over the other, and then that pulls people away from the soccer game, perhaps, if they slightly prefer this variation. I don't know, but... it's free to play, obviously, Google Play, App Store. If you played the first one, you know what you're getting. Watch our video and then give it a download if you like. I'm going to go on to Hi-Rise, which is, and I'm going to say the words Match 3, but this is an interesting one because it's not really a Match 3. This is all about buildings and buildings with coloured blocks. In a Lego-ish way, but not quite. Did you play this one?
I did. I had no idea what I was doing, and I loved every second of it.
Slick, isn't
it? Yeah, it's... So you got your little grid of spaces, and then you've got, like, blocks coming on the bottom of the screen, so you can see what's coming up, and then you've got to put them down, and it's kind of like the merge games in which, like, you have to, you know, swipe things together to merge them, except this time you've got to connect adjacent blocks of the same height so that they will also, like... absorb each other and start growing into tall buildings, and then you can like jet them off into space if you need some space with a certain power up and that kind of thing. It throws you right in at the deep end. Like you have a quick tutorial, and then once you're clear the tutorial, it's like, right, here's 4 or 5 different colors that now you have to contend with and match and put all over the place and that kind of thing, which was great, but it did mean that I completely lost track of what I was doing and how I was supposed to be doing it. But as you're playing, you're kind of putting things down, and you see the buildings, and you go, oh, okay, so if I put this to the, like, it'll have blocks that's like green on top and then yellow on the bottom, so put that sort of next to this one, and that's going to suck up there, and all this kind of thing, and you get the strategies, and then you start like setting up chains of absorptions, which is great, and you get like, you know, two of them grow into one building, which sucks into another building, which goes into another building, and then if the different colored block was on top, it'll like drop down, and then that gets absorbed into another building, and when you hit that chain, it's like, wow, this is so slick and cool. I have no idea how I did it, but it's so slick.
Well, funnily, it's going back to that Tetris thing we were talking about, when you clear a bunch of lines, line blocks, and everything falls down, and then that creates another, because something falls into a gap, and then you get another one off the back of it, and another as things start to cascade.
Yeah.
And they're always satisfying, because it's like ding, 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 ding.
Yeah.
And it does the same thing here, you're right, where it's like you got one that's kind of 2 blocks big, and one that's 1, and then you put another one next to the single block, and they go and become 2, and then because now there are 2 next to each other, they become 4, and you get these like building chains. But it is complicated because it's operating again isometrically, and you've got a limited number of spaces on the floor where you can start building these blocks and placing them, and you spin the screen around so you can view it from all angles, so it's got that additional extra like layer. You're not just dropping stuff downwards on a 2D plane.
Yeah. This, and you can move the camera around as well, so you're like, if you ever sort of, you've got a space in the middle where you can't see it anymore, you can go to a straight top-down view and start viewing the whole thing and putting things here and there, and I think that's really a really neat addition as well, just being able to see it in this vertical way, and horizontal as well. The whole 3D space working together makes it just a more interesting experience than any other kind of merge match 3 kind of experience. It's fascinating. Mm.
And the presentation is so nice in that way that a lot of this stuff is about visual and auditory feedback for the success. Like if this went bloop or something like that, and you know it happened instantaneously. But the buildings have this kind of elasticity. They're almost like jelly-like when they go whoom and appear. And the look, the feeling of it all coming together is great. And that's what keeps you wanting to sort of push further forward beyond just the cerebral satisfaction of it being a puzzle. You're like, the game is rewarding you with the way that it looks. And as the blocks, which is kind of plain, start to build, I think you start to get windows and things appear. They start to look more like buildings as they go as well. So it's a lot going on. I think it's really clever. I did it for about like half an hour last night and was having quite a nice time. It's free to play, so you can go over and try it. I don't know how they're monetizing it. I can't remember if there are ads.
I don't remember any ads, although I only played one full match, if I'm honest. But yeah, I don't remember there being anything particularly intrusive. Off the bat, at least.
Which is a good sign. Yeah. So that's free, and that's available Google Play, App Store, so you can get it from wherever you like. The other one, which this is one I haven't played, actually. Wow, that's a loud piece of music in my ear. Oh Money, Pay Money. You played this one?
Yes, I played it quite a bit because I enjoyed it.
All right, I've not played this. How does this go?
Well, first of all, I need to double check something because it said it's the 10th anniversary edition of it.
It does.
But I've never heard of Oh Money, Pay Money before.
Neither have I.
So I don't know what...
PC, apparently. Okay. I think indie PC thing that was popular.
Because the thing is, so it reminded me a lot of... I don't know if you played this one, but Gunpoint?
No. So maybe no.
It was is it Tom Francis, the guy who used to be at Rock Paper Shotgun or something. It was an indie game where you have like these jumping trousers and they fire you about the place and you can jump great lengths and then stick to walls and jump around and then hack things. This is basically very similar to that in terms of like you can ping yourself around in like an arc. So you start off I want to launch here, and then it'll show you the arc of where you're actually going to travel, and you can there's enemies that you have to crash into and then explode into a river of blood, and they drop money which you then pick up, and then there's all sorts of collectibles and platforming and all that kind of thing. It's really nice to play as well. There's like the very simple setup of you can only move by jumping and that kind of thing, but you can do double jumps. So if you're in the air, you can pause time again and redirect yourself and all this kind of stuff. That's really neat. The level design, from what I played, seemed pretty straightforward. You knew where you were going at all times, but also it was varied enough and interesting enough that you were sort of pinging around and going, okay, I need to jump up here, and planning your jumping strategy and all that kind of thing. There's like enemy variety straight from the off, so there's ones that you just ping into and they die. There's ones that have shields, so you need to get behind them or wait for them to temporarily drop their shields, and there's robots that take extra health, extra hits, and that kind of thing. Yeah, I think it's just a really neat game that plays really well and works really well on mobile. I'm now thinking also of Dandara, which came out a couple of years ago.
And that's what I was thinking.
Has a very similar thing, except like instead of the arc, you're pinging just backwards and forwards from walls. There's no sticking to walls in Oh Money, Pay Money. This is just jumping around and that kind of thing. So you do, because you've got the double jump, you do have to sort of think of that instead of like clinging to walls.
Hmm.
But I think it's a really fun little game. Definitely check it out, because I believe this is free to play as well. I have no idea how they're monetizing that. I assume it's going to hit a wall and you'll have to pay to open the full game at some point.
Yeah. It's either free to play or 17 quid. Those are your options this week. We're veering wildly over the pay spectrum. Or if you're feeling a little bit fivery. But the video looks exciting, and I see what you mean about that other Steam game where it reflects the same thing. Mm. And we've seen this before. It was around that Angry Birds time where it's like, right, everything now is a pull and release jump mechanic. But with those ones where you can double jump, you do get that nice bullet time kind of everything stops while you're re-aiming and release. And they had that as well on Golf Zero, that game by Colin Lane, which was, you know, the guy jumping out and then you stop and you get a few seconds to kind of readjust your trajectory before flying off.
Mm.
And if you fail, it just carries on and you die. That is always a good mechanic. When it's implemented right, you get a really nice panic, satisfaction feeling from that. So, Oh Money, Pay Money. And it actually appears as like O $P $P. That's how it's written in the game. So I tried to search for that in the App Store. Wasn't
it's impossible. It. I've tried to Google it now, but both O-Money, Pay-Money and O$, P$, iOS, it just does not come up. It was terrible, terrible name for SEO.
Bad SEO. No. But it does exist. Trust us. You can find links over on Pocket Gamer if you want to. I think that covers us this week. Obviously, there are more games that came out, and you can go and find those on pokegamer.com if you want to go and have a look. And if you want to either see the more business-focused podcast, that's available on Rick's YouTube channel, pg.biz, and obviously the sites and all the articles covering the industry. If you're interested in the numbers and the money and all that stuff, which we touched on briefly, that's where you get it. Hopefully, the video aspect hasn't offended too many people. We'll continue to do it on a weekly basis because we're recording it anyway. We're using Zoom. We might as well. And if you're listening in an audio fashion, then it's just nothing's business as usual, innit? We're still here.
Apart from all those great visual jokes that we cut out from the audio version. You know,
yes,
tune in
yes,
for and, James hitting himself with a foam hammer, which definitely happened.
It was really tricky getting in frame. I'm not going to lie. But I managed it because I'm a professional. All right then, folks. Well, thank you all for both listening and watching. Stay safe, stay well in these strange and tricky times. And we will see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.